Yeah, you know, Chicken Little is my favorite Disney movie, but did you know that it was actually created from like a European folktale called Henny Penny? And it was basically like an allegory
for NASA's... Listen, I hate to interrupt, but welcome to Hate to Interrupt. I am Gulif, otherwise known as Ethan, and I am joined by...
Nick from Stop Culture.
I'm VHS guy, Nick.
Yeah, and so today we're going to be covering two extremely disparate movies. The first movie is the latest from Marvel Studios, Captain America: Brave New World, which I believe was once called New World Order, but they changed it to Brave New World. Why do you guys think they did that?
Because it's, I think it's because so many stupid conspiracy theorists exist that they were afraid.
Not even just that. New World Order doesn't. After watching the movie, New World Order doesn't make any sense.
That would have made more sense as a title for Winter Soldier, since that's kind of the entire plot.
Well, there was one scene in the movie where it was like, we're entering a brave new world. Like the news anchor said that. Remember that?
That was definitely a reshoot line.
Dude, yeah, the fucking news scenes in the beginning, like the exposition news scenes that just like let you know what the new Captain America's been up to and how... a brand new President Thunderbolt Ross is in charge now, and he's wreaking havoc and just reminding people of what happened in the fucking 2008 Ed Norton Hulk movie that nobody remembers, you know?
To all the people like, that didn't want to watch our Disney Plus show, here's what happened.
Yeah, it was very egregious.
I loved the Edward Norton movie, but I'm also just like, I'll just suck off anything with Edward Norton in it.
It felt like a strange sequel to that, actually. It was weird. There's a lot of stuff from that movie that came back.
Yeah. And I think what do y'all think about Mark Ruffalo Hulk? Do y'all ever like
him? Fine. I don't know if they've done anything interesting with him in a while since like Thor Ragnarok.
I mean,
he wasn't even really in Thor Ragnarok.
I like Mark Ruffalo Hulk the best in the first Avengers movie, actually.
Where he's classic Hulk.
Yeah, because eventually he just became like he had more of a personality. He had like a conflicted sense of who he was, and then I think he got ironically like got less interesting as he started to accept the Hulk more, and then he kind of became like almost a comic relief character. Like by the time Professor Hulk rolls around in Endgame, it's like he's basically just a fucking joke. You know, yeah.
Well, there's a reason they never gave him his own movie. I feel like they were just like.
Well, I mean, that's apparently a rights issue. They're not allowed to give him a solo movie because Universal owns partial rights to a Hulk movie. So that's why he's always.
Because Lou Ferrigno would kill Kevin Feige if they did that.
I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a stupid cameo by Lou Ferrigno as like a version of the Hulk in the multiverse by the next Avengers movie.
They gave Lou Ferrigno a cameo in the like what's the Brokeback Mountain director in his movie?
Ang Lee.
Oh, Ang Lee.
Oh yeah, he's like a security guard at the place.
They gave him
Banner
a cameo
works.
In the Ang Lee Hulk.
I remember that.
Which, by the way,
like, look at this
actually,
ginormous,
I like the
jacked bodyguard.
I like the Ang Lee Hulk. I think that was actually
to me,
pretty
that's
good.
Like, to me, it's like on the cusp of being a like
it's
so bad it's a good movie.
It's
like
such
it's,
a
it's like right on the
it's
edge.
It's not so bad. It's good. I mean, you know, there are a lot of weird choices in the movie, and the Hulk looks goofy. It's so dated, you know. But I think they were trying to do with it, like the conflict between the Hulk and his father, I thought was really good, actually. And there were some moments that were actually very beautiful. I thought between
and
him
I actually
and
like
Jennifer Connelly.
The theme's really good too.
I can agree. I think
great musical.
I think all the Hulk moments kind of ruined it for me, though. Like whenever he's like munching on fucking missiles and shit, and he just looks so.
He was
goofy.
So green too. Like you know, I it would be a weird complaint to say that Hulk is too green, but he was way too saturated for me for my taste. He looked like
he was basically
cucumber.
Like fucking Exorcist vomit green.
Yeah, he was primary was Hulk. Color Hulk green.
Yeah.
So what did y'all think of Brave New World, boys?
Captain America.
I mean, I thought it was pretty fine. I especially considering all the reshoots and everything. You can see some of those seams in the movie, but I don't know. I didn't think it was like a horrible viewing experience by any means. It's definitely. It's not one of the worst Marvel movies, I don't think. I think it's like a mid-tier Marvel movie for me.
It was hard for me to pay attention to it. Like, it was okay. It was whatever. Like, it wasn't, like, egregiously bad, but it was really not keeping my attention very well. I'll say
that. I think if I saw this in theaters, And I think this was one of the first times where I was sitting in my chair and kind of thinking to myself, like, you know, I kind of want popcorn. Is it really worth going to get popcorn right now? The movie's already started. And I went, you know, I don't need popcorn. But if I really wanted popcorn, I would have been fine with getting up and missing some of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't usually do that.
Yeah. Like, no, I feel you.
My biggest, I mean, it sucks. I genuinely feel for Anthony Mackie because he's going to get shit on so much during this reign of him leading the Avengers and all this shit. And it's not really his fault. He shouldn't have been given a leading man role. Like, he really just shouldn't. He shouldn't be in this position.
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about that. The fact that he was even given the mantle of Captain America was a pretty wild choice. And it goes back to what I was saying last week about Kevin Feige just being cocky. It's like, I don't know what you guys feel about Chris Evans, but to me, he's an incredibly charismatic actor. He's like born to be a leading man, you know. And then to give that to Anthony Mackie, who barely worked most of the time as a supporting character during the first 10 years of Marvel, to give him the ostensible leading role in the Avengers, whatever that's going to be in the next couple of years, was pretty wild. It's definitely a fucking choice, you know. And I think we've seen in this movie that it's not necessarily working out so well. I don't know.
It's also an annoying discussion to have with people because a lot of people try to turn it into a character discussion, and it's not about the character taking over like as Captain America. Like, that's fine. It happened in the comics. I don't care. It's literally him as an actor. I just don't think he's a strong enough actor to carry it. People out there that want to argue.
I think, honestly, I do disagree with you guys. I think Anthony Mackie could have that potential to be a good leading man. My issue is I feel like not only was he kind of mischaracterized in this movie, I think he was just poorly written. Like, he was so uninteresting. Can you guys tell me what arc his character had in this movie? Like, what was his character arc by the end of the movie? What did he learn?
There was no progression of the character at all. At all.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, yeah. Like, and also the supporting characters were really bad too. Like his little Hispanic homie that comes around with him, and the actors weren't bad. I guess maybe homie. You're right. I didn't mean it in a weird way, but he had potential. Maybe if they like wrote something interesting to happen, but it was like so generic too. Like, it was like exactly what happened in all the early MCU movies with like the side characters. They get injured and then they come back and talk to him in the hospital bed at the end. Like that.
The worst side character for me was the Israeli superhero who was apparently
Israel.
Is she called Captain Israel?
No, she's not. I don't think she is. But I was really, honestly, I was really paying attention to her. It was also really funny because she's like 4'2" or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was like watching because I'm like, I've seen her on the poster. She's wearing like a white and blue Israeli captain or Israeli outfit. What are they doing? And I'm like, there's been like 5 rounds of reshoots. They kept being like, let's suit up. And then you'd see Falcon and Captain America fighting and she'd kind of just be nowhere to be seen. There's a part where you see her jacket over her outfit and then she just never goes into a fight in like that outfit. I think that's because they were just going to be like, guys, if we put her out there, people are going to call her Captain Genocide. We can't put her out there.
yeah. And another thing that was a big reshoot moment for sure.
And another thing that was annoying for me is like the president was so had the biggest hard on for killing the Isaiah guy. He's like, I want to kill the fuck out of this guy. And it's like, by the time the end, they're like, he's about to be executed. It's like, it was common knowledge that Mr. Pendanski was mind controlling people. It's like, everybody knew that it wasn't like him just trying to kill the president, but he's like, they're about to execute him. You got to do something quick. It's like, why do you want to kill him so bad?
I'm Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I really like Isaiah Bradley. I think that character is really cool. I think he's a great actor. He was able to do a lot with not much in terms of material. I mean, I really like that moment when Sam goes to see him in jail, and he's like, "Don't be a part of this. Like, I want you to stay away from this." And he's like, "He's just." Electric, that dude. That performer is genuinely incredible.
It was like the only moments in the movie where there was any like actual like I felt something a little bit, you know, like I had a little tingle in my heart.
Yeah, it makes my heart soft or really sad when it's like just a really sad old guy who's had like a really rough life who's just like, I just want a break, man.
And I will say, I think Mr. Pendanski was pretty good in it. I think he was a decent villain. I really hated the colors they chose to like make him. It's like,
are we talking about
the fuck
Nutsack
is Mr.
Head?
Pendanski?
The bad guy with the brain boy.
Nutsack Head.
Nutsack
Why do you call
head,
him Pendanski?
Because that's who he was in Holes.
Oh, he's got.
Oh, of course, the 2004 Shia LaBeouf movie.
Shia LaBeouf film.
I don't know the character. I don't know the character name, but
he was pretty good. Sam Seltzer, I think, is the character.
But didn't y'all see like the color on like the colors they chose to make him were weird. Like he didn't.
Well, he's supposed to be the eye effect.
He's hulking out in his own brain, dude. He's like galaxy braining it with
Hulk
magic.
Well, I don't have a problem with him making him not skin color. It was just like a weird, like orangey purple, and it just didn't look good.
It was a weird
effect.
That's
what
sure.
That's what everyone knows. I mean, you can ask Neil deGrasse Tyson this. If you fucking inject enough gamma radiation into your body, you're gonna Hulk the fuck out. Whether it's in your brain or in your musculature, you're gonna turn green and you're gonna fucking Hulk out.
This is off topic. But you know how in movies, I've seen in movies, and I Googled it to see that they were real, but I didn't Google what they're for. They have really, really big microwaves. What do they use really big microwaves for?
What, this was in that movie?
No, well, there's one movie I can think of that has a really big microwave. But
are
they
you talking
have
about
really
Kick-Ass?
Big microwaves. Yeah, Kick-Ass. But they exist, and what are they for?
I mean, is
going
it
off
for the
AI
overview, the restaurant?
Which is, as we know, is very reliable. Food processing, ceramic manufacturing, chemical processing, medical applications, volumetric heating. Oh, wait. Yeah, no, that's it.
No, I heard that they make really big microwaves for specifically for the Flash to catch babies in.
I could fit so many babies
honestly,
in here. It's
I'll
so
say,
efficient.
I enjoyed the Flash 10 times more than I enjoyed this movie.
I'll agree with that for sure.
I think this was it ended, and I watched this with my brother and sister, and we all kind of looked over to each other and we're like, "How are we feeling?" And we went like, like middle to like bad.
It's one of those things that I can't. I'm not going to say it's horrible. Like I'm not going to just shit on it entirely. It was fine, but it's like,
yeah,
is this really all you have? Whenever we've had this long without an MCU movie, like you're coming off. Like, imagine they released a good movie after this long of a wait. Like, think of how much fucking money they would have made after that such a big hiatus of Marvel movies.
Because they did Deadpool and Wolverine was the last one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even MCU world either. Like,
no.
No, it is. Like, that was, no, like, I mean, Deadpool's big, is, yeah. big entrance to the MCU.
Well, now it is. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, this is, like, the actual return of, like, the Avengers, main Avengers
the main,
group type
yeah.
stuff. You know what I mean?
It is funny that they've been struggling to just do the Winter Soldier again, and they've been doing it so badly each time, and it's because I've been seeing
what were the other movies that they were trying to do that anything
well they were kept pitching Secret Invasion, which I know I haven't seen.
Uh-oh.
But all I've been seeing are bad things. They're like, guys, if you liked Winter Soldier, Secret Invasion is for you. And, and it's just, I don't know, this felt like they were trying to do Winter Soldier as well.
Didn't they release like a female Deadpool show of some kind?
I have no idea.
It was like a female Deadpool type, not Deadpool, Daredevil type, female Daredevil type character. Am I crazy?
Oh, it was Echo. Echo.
Oh, dude, that show was fucking unwatchable. Goddamn.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, guys, I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but it's like you're gonna hire a performer who doesn't speak, and you have to make sure you hire someone who can emote facially, and that woman has like three modes of fucking facial expression. It's just like angry, surprised, and fucking just like, I don't even know what the third one is, but it's
angry.
It's horrible.
I saw the terrible trailer for it whenever the trailer first came out, and I was like, yeah, I'm not watching that shit. So
that was in the tail end of just me kind of falling off of Marvel. So I was like, it's just in the pile of all the shows I'm not going to watch.
Yeah, I think my hype died whenever I watched Moon Knight. I watched Moon Knight and I was like, oh, this looks fucking sick. Moon Knight's a cool comic. And then I like watched it and I was just like, that was just
pretty
so
lame.
Mid. It was so like yeah. they had the acting chops. They had like the direction looked okay, but just like it was okay. I mean,
wait,
I feel like they
you didn't like the first episode of Moon Knight? I thought the first episode of Moon Knight was actually like exceptional for the
episode. The first episode
MCU
was pretty cool, and I think what's the actor's name? I forget his name.
Oscar Isaacs.
Oscar Isaacs. Yeah. I think he did a good job. There was so much potential there, but it just.
It's like they always have this problem where it's like they have to make it a fucking CGI typical Marvel fest by the end of it, no matter what. And
that's why people love the fucking the Netflix shows so much, because they were very grounded.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's what they're going to do with Daredevil. They made sure to be pretty explicit that it's going to have at least somewhat of a similar feel to the Netflix shows through the trailers, and even all the marketing seems that way too.
So I was actually reading something up on it, and they were basically saying it's going to be even more gory than the Netflix show. But I'm worried about that in terms of, like, because technically I would say Deadpool and Wolverine was more gory than the other Deadpool movies, right? But it also was like way more cartoony almost, and like just kind of like over the top ridiculous gory. And like, I feel like I'm worried they're going to do that with Daredevil. Just make it too cheesy by trying to make it too violent. What do y'all think?
I don't think it's going to be as gory.
Because it's just like Daredevil isn't funny, you know? He's like, as a character, he's serious as a heart attack. So it's hard to make his action scenes look cartoonish. I would imagine that would be pretty difficult for them to pull off. I mean, Deadpool, especially paired up with Wolverine, they're two guys who like can't fucking die. So of course they're just going to like stab each other constantly, and it's going to look ridiculous. But like, Daredevil's just a dude, you know, like
it wasn't even like they couldn't die. But I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. But I think in like the, like, for example, in the Deadpool and Wolverine scene when they're just killing all the fucking Deadpools, like, there was no weight to any of that, those deaths. I know none of them can fucking die, but like, there was no weight to any of the violence. It was just so fucking just, I don't know. It
felt weightless, like you said.
Yeah, it was literally just weightless.
That was, honestly, that was what I was, because I was trying my best not to compare this new Captain America to Winter Soldier, because that's like the gold standard for me for like first three MCU stuff or the grounded stuff. And man, that first fight scene he has where he goes into, what is it, like a church or something? I was just watching the action and it felt so paint by numbers. It felt like the director went, okay, action scene, I'm going to hand this over to my DP, the Marvel guy, and he's just going to, okay, now you punch him. All right. And we're going to move the camera. Okay. All right. Let's go home, everybody. It didn't feel like there was any energy or purpose behind any of the camera angles.
There was
any
a lot
of movement.
There was a lot of bad editing too. Like whenever I literally wrote this down in my notes. Whenever like whenever Harrison Ford first turns into the Hulk, there's a scene like where Captain America jumps in and he fucking throws his shield at him. There's not even like a scene, like it's like a split second. It cuts back to him and he already has his shield in his hand. I'm just like, you're not even gonna fucking show it bouncing back to him or anything. Like, it's,
you gotta give him some leeway with the shield, dude. The shield doesn't make any goddamn sense.
I mean, it's like Thor's hammer at this point.
It doesn't. I'm not saying they have to like be like, okay, if it hits this wall, it needs to hit that wall and then come back to him. I'm saying if it hits something, make it bounce back to him at the very fucking least. Like, I can only fucking suspend my disbelief for so long.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff could have been better, I guess. But I mean, if I just look at it like in a turn my brain off way, like watching him fight the Red Hulk, who is the president, is like kind of funny, I guess.
It's hilarious.
But it's just so fucking stupid. Like when you come down to it, he's having a press conference about a new fucking element or something being discovered in a giant robot that's fucking like coming out of the ocean. And
I know
we're
you
supposed
could kill
to be
me.
We're supposed to be taking this seriously as like an actual, you know, political conflict between nation states. And then the fucking president turns into the Hulk. And it's just like,
turns into a big Red Hulk.
This movie should not feel grounded. Like, to try to make this feel like this is real, some kind of parallel to real life politics that happened in our world. It's just so it doesn't work. You know, it's so weird.
Yeah, whereas like Winter Soldier, sorry, I keep going back to it. Like that one is going very grounded, but it never asks too much of you. All it is like, listen, there's been a coup and Nazis are in control of the government. That's pretty much all there is. And there's some Russian brainwashing and other super soldiers. And like you said, there's a, okay, we got a god coming out of the Indian Ocean, who's also turned into stone, who's also made of adamantium, which is Wolverine, which is different than vibranium, because that's a, this is a more super duper version of the metal. It's even more better. And now I'm a red giant green guy at a press monster at a press conference.
the entire last 10 of the 10 minutes of this movie, you were right. It was the most paint by numbers shit I've ever seen in my life. First of all, him talking down the Hulk, like, come on.
I was expecting a
look at the cherry blossoms.
Sun's getting real low.
Him talking down the Hulk, him going to his like his new sidekick and being like, I'm so glad you're okay. Let's have a laugh that ends the movie. Like, oh my fucking God. It was so fucking cliche.
Yeah. It's I was talking about this a while ago with some friends, and it was just like, there kept being these improv moments in the movie where it felt like there was no script, and there was like, all right, Anthony, you and the other guy, new Falcon Jr., are going to be like doing a little, you're going to walk down this hallway and just going to be joking around and just, and go. And they'd just be like, oh, hey, you did that little, oh, yep, okay. And then the scene was just, you know, end or continue. And there was a few of those, and they ended the movie on this super awkward
spoken like a true scene. Spoken like a true Miamian or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, Floridian. Like, yeah, something. And I was just like, like, oh, okay. Fuck, and then it just ends. I'm like, that's a really weird scene to end it on.
Also, did you guys notice why were they both wearing like Ant-Man helmets? Did you notice that?
Oh, like, how like, they're like
both
the shape.
Yeah, both of their costumes were like ant-manified.
I feel like that had to have been something that got cut or something, because it was like just like that in the beginning, right?
No, I think it was that. It was like that the whole time.
Yeah, they had a helmet for each version.
Oh, it was different?
It was a white one versus the dark blue one at the end, yeah. But it's the same helmet, pretty much.
And also, I was wondering, maybe if you, since you guys are more into the comic books behind all of this stuff, well, you don't really read Marvel, so maybe this is not a good question to ask, but like, how the fuck was Sam able to pierce the Hulk's skin? Like, how the fuck did
his wings are made of vibranium?
Yeah.
And vibranium is strong enough to pierce the Hulk? I thought like the only things that were strong enough to pierce the Hulk's skin are like the one time you only see it happen really once in the MCU with the real Hulk, and it's that Hela's gigantic dog, I forget what it's called, and Ragnarok.
Fenris.
He punctures Hulk's skin. That's the only time it ever happens. So I was like, damn, he's just got like vibranium and he's able to do it. I thought you needed some like cosmic fucking super materials to do this shit.
No,
you know?
It's in the comics because like Wolverine always fights the Hulk in the comic, or he's like famous for fighting the Hulk, and he's able to like stab the shit out of Hulk. Because vibranium, I'm pretty sure, was invented for the MCU because they did not own the rights to adamantium, because that's all Wolverine owned by Fox. Now that they have it, they're like, okay, they're different, but they're the exact same, but one's stronger. But yeah, that's always been able to pierce gamma stuff.
Oh, wait, vibranium isn't in the comics?
No, I'm pretty I might get called out, but I'm pretty certain it was invented
for the MCU. I think it is
adamantium
in the comics.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think so. Cap Shield is vibranium in the comics. I'm pretty sure of that. I think so.
We'll see.
Like there, you got.
Maybe it's something else.
I could have sworn I read that Cap Shield is made of vibranium in the comics, because Wakanda is still the capital of vibranium. They brought vibranium to the world. You seeing anything about it?
I can't find an answer. There's so many. God damn it. Comics are so fucking stupid.
We should just make a short of this, and one of us is just going to look like a fucking idiot.
Vibranium was created by Marvel Comics in 1966, first appearing in Daredevil number 13.
Oh, okay. I thought it was created.
Originally shrouded in mystery, the fictional metal was fleshed out across various comic lines over the next few years. Vibranium is actually an alien metal that crashed to Earth, hence its fantastical properties.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. Yeah, okay, so his shield is vibranium is just, metal alloy.
It's just like, it's like adamantium light, basically, you know? That's kind of the only difference. I don't know. I thought there were some things that you could say were good about this movie. I mean, however dumb the premise is of a celestial coming out, and I mean, you know, I should I should rephrase that, because I don't think it's on the face of it dumb to have a Celestial. Like, I think the Celestials are actually pretty cool, mostly because I have megalophobia and I just like, I like looking at giant fucking
things. Visuals are cool, yeah.
Yeah, because it scares me, but it's also kind of exciting to see a giant fucking, like, I don't even know, like,
it's like a 10,000
mile, yeah, 10,000 mile high space god that like creates Earth or whatever.
Did either of you guys watch Eternals?
Yeah. Like I liked some of that stuff in the Eternals. Actually, I thought the moral conflict in the Eternals was pretty cool. Like, do you save Earth, which had their whole conflict was like, Earth is kind of special because they were able to defeat Thanos and bring people back and all that stuff. But at the same time, if you let the Celestial grow, that means Earth will be destroyed. But the Celestial will then create, you know, hundreds of thousands of other planets that have intelligent life on them, so they can thrive instead. So by basically like freezing the Celestial, you prevent all that life from being created in the universe, which I thought was actually kind of an interesting premise in a sort of stupid movie. But I don't know.
The Eternals is one of those things where, like, I don't know how it failed. Like, I feel like it was, I almost had everything going for it. It had a solid director, had a pretty fucking sick cast. Like, I don't I don't know how it failed. Like, there was almost
a mouth. It had terrible Rotten Tomatoes scores, bad reviews.
Well, I mean, the movie sucked. I'm just saying, like, how did it? Like, I don't think it should have sucked. Like, they had everything going.
I think word of mouth is a big deal. Like, people will probably, I mean, you know, Captain America is doing well right now despite probably some bad word of mouth, because it's a recognizable character. You know, Captain America, regardless of who's playing it, people are going to be like sort of interested in how Marvel is continuing to pass the torch with that character. But the Eternals and even Guardians of the Galaxy, like if Guardians of the Galaxy came out and had a 40 in 2013 and had a 48 Rotten Tomatoes score and no one was really talking about it, it would have failed too, I think, you know?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think the word of mouth would have been bad if that movie sucked, though.
I'm just saying hypothetically, if it had the same critic scores, like I think that stuff does matter. You don't think so?
But I think the movie just wasn't good. I think that's the problem.
Imagine Guardians wasn't good. Like, Guardians only became a phenomenon because it was 100%. So exceptional, you know?
Being an unrecognized character, you have to, like, actually make a solid movie. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But my whole thing with Captain America is, like, trying to insert that extremely, you know, admittedly fucking goofy fucking comic book stuff into this more Winter Soldier grounded... Somewhat, I mean, they're trying to say something about politics. I don't fucking know what it is. I mean, is it that Trump is actually a Hulk man? I don't know. Like, what the fuck is
No, this? The the most unbelievable thing is that the president, who is clearly a bad person, can learn and grow from his actions.
The directors are just imagining Trump being in the raft at the end. Like,
wouldn't that be nice?
I'm glad you're learning from your mistakes, Mr. Trump.
I'm gonna stay in president. I'm gonna stay in the prison now.
I have one question though. This. I thought about this earlier, and I was talking about it in the Discord a little bit. Do y'all think that the nanobot shit has, like, kind of ruined Marvel a little bit?
Oh, the nanotech
shit? Like, visually, it's kind of ruined Marvel.
I think it's really, it's very much that assembly line thing where it's like they go, well, we can do the helmet effect where you just, the helmet evaporates and then, oh, the helmet's back on now. And it's like that purple hue to it. It's very uninteresting. They don't ever do anything interesting in the story or the action using it. Like, in this point, he gets his helmet pulled off and breaks, but I'm like, you could have just had him wear a real helmet that gets pulled off. And I don't know. It looks so visually uninteresting.
It just lets them not have to use practical for anything. And it just makes everybody be a lot more lazy.
I mean, I might get corrected on this, but I'm pretty positive all of that shit started because Robert Downey Jr. was tired of wearing anything. He was like, just fucking, I'll wear a pair of sunglasses that turns into the Iron Man suit, you know? And then they were like, why don't we just do this for every character, you know?
Yeah, I just don't like that they gave every, like, that's fine for Iron Man, because also, Iron Man's kind of a lazy asshole. Yeah, sure, give him the lazy nanotech. But why is, like, Ant-Man? Why is literally all the Avengers in Endgame?
Spider-Man's so lame, bro.
I hate that he doesn't pull off his mask.
I hate it so much, dude. I think, like, because that's, like, the whole thing. Like, Spider-Man is, like we were talking about the other day, like, Spider-Man's kind of like the everyman, right? Like, I don't like that he just fucking has a suit that miraculously comes on and is made fully out of metal. It looks fucking stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't hate it as much as you guys do. I definitely do miss the practical helmets and stuff. I can see why they do it, but definitely it's not something that, like, really irks me that much, I guess.
And everything doesn't have to be so future-y too. Like even like in the in this movie, in the president's, like, speech, he's, like, looking at all these holograms everywhere, pointing shit out, and it's like, why? Like, you can just be modern time. You can just be now. Like,
well, you have to remember that everything that's happening in the MCU is taking place in 2030. It's all 5 years ahead of us. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Because Avengers Endgame was a 5 jump. Well, no, that would have been, what, 2024? Because it came out in 2019. So,
yeah, but assuming that every MCU, the way I'm doing it is that, like, you have to assume that every MCU movie that is supposed to be present day is coming out 5 years after the year that the movie drops. You know, like, that seems like it makes sense to me. But I don't know. Their timeline is all fucked up at this point. Anytime you introduce time travel, it's going to be. So
I just think visually, it's like the Marvel movies have lost a lot of their charm. Like, the Iron Man, like, still felt very, like, grounded. And there were a lot of real elements to it. And even some of, like, the early Marvel movies, they were the same way. But, like, it just all feels so, like, just too shiny and, like, I don't know.
Uninteresting. Lackluster. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I will say my favorite sequence in the movie was the air fight around the Celestial. I thought that was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool, like, dogfight in the air, you know. Did you guys like that at all?
Yeah, the concept was fine, but it never felt to me like anything. There never felt like there were stakes, and I was like, oh, are they going to kill his little sidekick or not? Well, they're going to. No, he's gonna get hurt, and then okay, he won. I don't know. It just, like, I was never invested in it. It all just felt like, oh, yeah, I'm watching the computer.
I genuinely don't think I could say a single scene in the movie that I was like, oh, that was really good.
I think Harrison Ford, the Red Hulk, looked very visually impressive.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they did a good job making it
look like the Hulk and Harrison Ford, and I think they did a good job with that.
There was no effects. They just asked Harrison Ford about Star Wars, and he turned into that.
I think Harrison Ford's Red Hulk looks more like the actual Harrison Ford than Mark Ruffalo's Green Hulk. You guys agree with that?
Yeah, actually, kind of. Like, I think, are you talking about, like, Professor Hulk or, like, the old Hulk?
Just like any of them. I try to look for Mark Ruffalo's face in the Hulk, and I don't really see it.
In Professor Hulk, I definitely see it, but in his regular Hulk, I don't see it as much in the
normal Hulk. Yeah, he's like a big baby face. In Ang Lee's Hulk, man.
Do you guys know about the horny for Hulk movement?
What?
No. Do I want to know?
Is it his big green cucumber that people want to see or something?
I think it started after Endgame when he was, like, wearing wife beaters and stuff. Like, people were like, yo, I actually kind of want to fuck the Hulk, dude.
Well, they have AI. You don't know about this? So they can nope. Figure something out, I guess.
This is the first time hearing about it. Where are you perusing the internet, sir?
I mean, just Twitter, bro. Just, this stuff goes on. I mean, there was a Thirsty for Thanos movement as well.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I saw
why
that.
Why does that make more sense than horny for Hulk?
Have you seen that chin, man? It's disgusting.
I think we've all seen that. I think we've all seen that Thanos picture. It's all good.
But the one where he's twerking? Another Marvel related thing that I wanted to get on our podcast was this has been an argument that me and Nick have been having since I've known him, basically. That Nick basically. He basically thinks anyone who likes Marvel movies is stupid, and to me, it angers me. Not only because I like Marvel movies, so I think I personally feel offended because you're calling me stupid by extension. But I just think it's an objectively, like, you can empirically prove that it's wrong by just, like, pointing to a smart guy that likes Marvel. There are a lot of them out there, and I don't think it's, like, a helpful way to categorize fans of things or to analyze this type of media. So I mean I Maybe I'm mischaracterizing your take, but that's how I have
it. Yeah, let's hear your perspective, Nick.
I think that if the majority of what you watch is superhero stuff, then yeah, I don't have much. I don't take much. I'm not going to take much out of your like film opinions. I like kind of automatically kind of disregard them if your main interest is watching superhero movies and not other films as well. That's more what I'm saying. If I'm sitting here talking shit about a Marvel movie that I think is objectively bad, and somebody's like, no, it's fucking sick, because without actually having any kind of like real like input about why the movie is good, other than it's sick, it's a Marvel movie, then yeah, I don't think that that's a very smart person in regards to film to talk to.
So is that, you're saying they're not smart in regards to film, not just like generally?
Specifically film, is that what you're referencing?
Yes,
I take opinions.
Correct. I think they're not very intelligent in terms of like what they know about film. Yes.
I want to alert Ethan and everyone listening. This is a watering down of the take. The original take was Marvel fans are stupid. And you can,
but that's
there
like,
are times
that's
where
a blanket
Nick says
statement.
This. Nick says this in his videos. And dude, for anyone listening, Nick made a video. What was the topic of the video again, Nick?
It was on the Hitman comic.
Hitman DC.
Yeah,
comics
within the like, he's talking about like comic book adaptations, and within the first fucking like 10 seconds, he's like, "Yeah, I know, like most Marvel fans are just fucking stupid ass morons who want to watch flashing lights on a screen
bitches.
Or whatever."
I think maybe I think they're dumb. I don't know, dude. It's not like I would like hate them, but like, yeah, if like your main source of enjoyment is just fucking watching fucking Avengers movies, then yeah, I probably think you're a little dumb, you know?
I think this is more of an issue. Like for example, if I hear the statement from someone like they go, man, all movies today just aren't as good as they used to be, then I think they just watch Hollywood shit. And I mean, in the majority of that stuff is superhero content at this point. But I don't know. I think it's like if all you're watching is Marvel and then you come out and you go, God, Parasite was so stupid. I didn't get it. Or The Substance was so weird. I don't get it. I might be a little.
But you also have to keep in mind, like whenever somebody thinks somebody is or says somebody is stupid, right? Like you're only judging it based on the things that you're actually like intelligent in, right? Like I could meet somebody who's like super fucking intelligent, knows all kinds of fucking math equations and shit. And to me, I'm fucking retarded, right? But like,
that's
if
a
they
slur,
know
Nick.
Nothing, whatever. If they don't know anything about movies, to me, then I think they're dumb. You know, it's all objective. It's all dependent on like what you know
so
about.
If someone doesn't
and
watch movies,
think...
they're dumb, Nick.
At the end of the day, like film is an art form, but if you consider the way it's consumed by people, it's entertainment. It's like an entertainment diet. What kind of movies you watch, it has nothing to do with someone's intelligence. Like literally nothing. The kind of entertainment they watch, I seriously doubt says anything about their intelligence. Because some people who work really, you know, high, like extremely stressful jobs, even like important jobs, they get home and they're like, I just had a really fucking stressful day. Maybe they're a doctor, maybe they're a lawyer. They just want to, they'll watch like reality TV shows when they get home or Marvel movies. And that says absolutely nothing about their intelligence. You know,
it's what
choose to watch when they're winding down at the end of the day. You know, I don't think it says nothing
but
about
like,
intelligence.
My whole point is somebody could think I'm really, really stupid because I don't know a lot about what they know about. And that's fine.
So you're basically saying you're like, I will not respect the opinion of someone who is uninformed on the topic.
Yes. Yeah, so if somebody has like a Marvel movie in their top five movies, then I'm not going to take their film criticism seriously. I'm not going to listen.
He's using dumb as a catch-all term. That's the problem here. When he means uninformed or they don't watch.
Yeah, I don't mean
Marvel
they're like. I don't mean they're like literally
film.
Sitting there drooling and like, like can't fucking put the.
That's the way. That's the way
baby
you framed
your
it.
Mouth
you framed it that
Deadpool
way in the past. Wolverine.
They don't know how to put the frosting on their fucking toaster strudel. I don't mean that, bro.
That shit's hard.
What if, all right, so what if, so you said that if a Marvel movie was in their top five, what if it was you know, Endgame at number 5 or something, and then 4 of your favorite movies past that, would you still be like, you're a fucking idiot? Like,
I would ask them why.
I mean, who knows why? Maybe they just really loved Endgame and think it's a great movie.
I'd be like, why that over the various movies that like have a lot more to say than Endgame?
Okay. Well, I mean, this
it all comes down to personal connection to film and art that jives with you or makes you feel good.
Yeah. I just wanted to say publicly that I feel like this whole it's not just you. I think it's a lot of people who do this. They're just like, oh, the people who like X are fucking stupid. I don't think it's helpful, and I think it's like,
I think it's probably false.
It's a wrong take.
I can 100% see where you're coming from. I can 100% see where you're coming from. The biggest thing is, I think we went through a very long phase of where people were very, very blind in their love for Marvel shit, and I think that. Now that like people are starting to look at it more objectively and see the flaws in it at times when there are flaws, like I feel more comfortable actually saying the shit that I want to say instead of having just circular arguments where somebody's saying, no, it's great because it's awesome. It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, it's great because it's awesome. What, like, name something good about the movie. Tell me why you like it.
Why did you like some people are looking to get something out of it. Some people are just like, I don't know, it was fun.
Many times on like Reddit and fucking Twitter when I use them actively, yes, I had many arguments. I mean,
there are people I know, my wife reads a lot of books, and I've kind of corrupted her into being very analytical on stuff like this. So she'll read a really terrible book that's super popular that like her friends will ask her to read, and then she'll start to be like, well, they're like, you didn't like it? And she tells them, she starts going into detail on the things that she really didn't like and why it doesn't work. And they start going like, nope, never mind. I don't want to hear it because you're going to ruin it for me. Because there are people that will they just want to take it in and go, well, that was nice. Moving on. I don't want to be ruined of this memory. I don't want this memory to get tarnished by your assholery.
No, and I get that too. Like, I'll ruin movies for people too. And I feel kind of bad about it. No, just because like... They like get out and they're like they're like smiling after we get out of the theater, and I'm just like what do you think? I'm like,
okay. I mean, there is
because that's the way that most people interact with media, though. They just like they take it in. Maybe if they don't like it, they're just like, that wasn't for me, and it doesn't really go beyond that. But most people don't start a podcast to do what we're doing. You know, this is kind of what we do. And
yeah, we're a bunch of elitist pricks.
To say those people are less intelligent or something for not digging into movies in the same way that we do, I think it's just wrong. I don't know.
I don't know about that, but I do think that I see my own I watch stupid things. I watch things that are bad objectively, and I think the fact that I know they're bad objectively yet I still enjoy them is the difference. And I think that if people could just be like, I see the flaws in these Marvel movies, but I grew up reading these comics. I really love these characters. So honestly, I don't really care that they're bad. If somebody told me that, I would be like, okay, that's completely understandable. But nobody says that.
Yeah.
I mean, but you can just infer that's like pretty much what they mean. They're like, I don't know, I liked it. I don't really have to go into detail about it. Go play on your fucking movie podcast, you dweeb.
I guess so.
Well, I have a question. I have a question for you, Culture Nick.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Mr. Marty Scorsese and Marvel movies and his whole controversy?
I agree with him largely. I mean, I don't really see Marvel movies as being on the same level as the stuff, you know, for example, the stuff he makes. I think his analogy of calling them theme park rides is pretty apt. I think that makes sense. But at the same time, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with a movie feeling like a theme park ride. Like movies can be anything, you know, as we've covered that on this podcast a lot. So, I mean, if a movie isn't as interested in like exploring the depths of human emotion and connection and stuff like that, and it's more interested in spectacle, I don't think there's anything at the core wrong with that at all. So,
do you feel like it's... But do you feel like it's like a like bad for the culture of film as a whole, though?
Well, that, like, yeah, that's the issue I was going to bring up. It's like when, especially back in like the late 2010s, when Marvel was so ubiquitous and they were like, it was like an empire. It was, you know, and there was Disney. You guys remember those reports of like Disney pushing out smaller films out of multiplexes and stuff when their like movies Force
Awakens.
Yeah. I mean,
it was like Hateful Eight got pushed out.
Yeah, it's like same kind of thing, and they were monopolizing the film industry. But I mean, they're not really that way at this point right now. I mean, Marvel movies can flop now. Not every one of them makes over $1 billion, and that's more kind of their own failings than anything else, I think. But you know, things rise and fall. You know, genres come in and out of style and everything. I think I did definitely have a problem with it. Conceptually, when Marvel was completely taking over the entire film industry, and every movie, by extension, had to inject that Marvel humor into it, which is something that we've all noticed. You know,
every
movie
has like
quippy characters and shit, and fucking every movie is a spectacle. Like that was an issue to me. Yeah,
but it's not just Marvel now. Like now it's every other franchise too, like Jurassic World, the DC show.
Yeah,
everything has to tie together.
Really annoying humor,
and it's like. Like I think I personally think that Marty's like statement was more from a place of being a lover of film rather than being a hater of Marvel. Like I think
I agree with that.
Because I think that he loves going to see movies and he loves seeing movies that are great coming out, and I think he's just was seeing less of them, and that's where it kind of came from, you know.
Yeah. Marvel took up so much space in the industry that people either had to try to emulate them or just fucking not get a seat at the table anymore. Which was that
make
was
a movie
problem,
with
you know
make a movie with 1/10 of the budget they used to have.
Yeah, but I mean I don't know. Great movies are still coming out all the time, and we talk about them. You know, maybe they don't get as many eyes on them as they did before. Things like Marvel kind of monopolize at least the theater industry, because now it feels like people watch really good movies at home and really dumb big movies in the theaters. You know,
yeah.
I mean, personally, that's what I do. I'm like one of those people. I like watch a really good movie at home, and then like when I want to see something really that has a lot of spectacle, I'll go see it on the big screen. There are exceptions to that, obviously. Like I'll go see a lot of good stuff at the art house theater up the street from me and shit, but yeah,
we've talked about it before though, but like yeah, there's still good movies being made, but I still think there's a whole like range of films that just kind of don't exist anymore, like those like mid-budget movies.
Yeah, mid-budget's dead essentially at this point.
And I think there's probably millions and millions of fucking, not literally, but like a ton of good scripts out there that like The Matrix or something like that that could be being made instead of some of these fucking movies that just aren't, you know. We're probably missing out on a lot of fucking good movies because of this shit.
Which leads us to When Harry Met Sally, which is an amazing mid-budget movie from 1989, directed by Rob Reiner.
So why'd you recommend this, Sir Nick?
I recommended this because we had the idea of taking the month of February to discuss romance films, like rom-coms and you know anything involving love. And for me, I'm not a big fan of these kinds of movies generally, like except like Her and Lost in Translation and shit like that. I like those movies a lot, but whenever I think of romance movies, the connotation for me is rom-coms, and I don't necessarily love that genre as much. But When Harry Met Sally is like the shining pearl of the rom-com genre for me. Throughout all of film history, I think it's an incredible movie. Like I watched it for the first time a couple years ago, and I was wowed by it. And then I watched it again last night, and just reminded me how beautifully written that movie is. Like it's so incredibly tight. The script is amazing. The characters are amazing. The performances are amazing. I couldn't love it more. Honestly, I think it's a perfect movie. What did you guys think of it?
It's mid. No, I'm kidding. No, I really like this. I didn't know anything about it going in, besides that it was Rob Reiner, who also did Princess Bride after this, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I've always heard this film, and this was very much a like a you hear the lines come on and you're like, oh, that's where that's from. Interesting. Like the I'll have what she's having, which is constantly referenced all throughout pop culture. Yeah. No, I really liked this. I really liked the chemistry the two leads had. I will say though that Meg Ryan is way out of his league though. That was the most unbelievable part of
this. That's not true, bro. He's so charismatic and that's all that matters.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It could go either way. It can go either way. He's very charismatic, and you know, like he admittedly doesn't really feel like a real person, you know, but it doesn't even matter because he's just such a beautifully written character that like you're never gonna meet anyone that's that witty in real life, you know, who knows the perfect thing to say at every moment. And generally, like I can get kind of annoyed with scripts that are it's not that this movie is like overly the dialogue is overly ornate or something like Succession, it can be at times, but the film just like moves so perfectly from each time jump where you get like a. Every time jump builds on an aspect of their relationship, and it's all leading towards this realization that the entire time they were perfect for each other, even though they couldn't see it themselves, and everyone else around them could. But you've seen it before, right?
I'd watched it previously on like cable like years ago, and I actually sat down and like fully watched it finally. I liked it, and I do agree that the writing is really really solid. I mean, really, the only thing that like kind of bugged me about it is just it was almost like overly will they, won't they, to like and the extent of like just kind of being fucking annoying. But there were like a lot of things that I did like about it that kind of outshined that annoyance, you know. Like, I really like what they did with like how minimal they kept the music in it. Like a large portion of the music is or movie is just like them talking with no music, and it like works somehow, even though. Realistically shouldn't,
because they're both very engaging.
I think the dialogue was all super super solid, and I think movies nowadays are like afraid to make the characters talk because they're almost afraid of it being cheesy, but it's just people can't write good dialogue anymore. So it was really I don't know, it's kind of a breath of fresh air, but it was like I think they made them won't too many times during the movie, and I was just like, oh my fucking god.
Like that is definitely a carrot on the stick.
Yeah, that's definitely a criticism you can make. It's like if you met these two people in real life, like Carrie Fisher and the writer character who she gets with eventually, were saying it's like you guys are obviously fucking meant to be together, but they won't see it, and probably the reason they won't see it is because it's a fucking movie, and you need to get them together at the end, and there needs to be conflict. Yeah, like why would Billy Crystal be like, oh, we're, you know, this you're the first woman that I've ever been, I've ever just wanted. What did you say? Like, you're the first attractive woman that I've ever wanted to have sex with or be in a relationship with or whatever. But it's like you. I mean, from the moment you met her, you were clearly attracted to her. You told her so. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see that criticism, but I don't know. There's just so many real moments of this movie. There's so many deeply hilarious moments of this movie. Like, remember on the airplane, I was laughing so loud when it's just like a stupid little thing, but like the guy sitting next to Meg Ryan when Billy Crystal like pops his head over, then he starts talking to her, and the guy just like he sees the connection between them and he starts smiling, and he's like, do you want to like switch seats? Like, I don't know. That was just such a perfect moment to me. Just this, like, basically glorified extra character being, he, like, sees what the audience sees, too. Another thing that, you know, there was one thing that I noticed in this movie that was really, really cool. From the first car ride, when you remember he's chewing the grapes and spitting them out of the car window.
Onto the window.
Yeah, like the first one goes onto the window. And then he, like, he punctuates his lines. Most of the time, it's either like a joke or something that he says that kind of leaves her gobsmacked. She doesn't know what to say to like spit a grape out after that. But that trend of like some kind of physical action punctuating the dialogue continues throughout the movie. Like there's that, and then there's the scene when she's crying after her ex gets married. She's like throwing the tissues up in the air. She'll blow her nose and throw the tissues up in the air, and it just like. like Nick said, that kind of physical comedy doesn't really exist that much anymore in movies. And I appreciated that so much. It was like, I also like that
he made fun of how picky she was the entire movie. And then like at the end, when they finally get their interview, he's like saying it like it's a good thing that she's picky.
Yeah, like, oh, I always loved how cute she was when she was so picky. And
kind of changes the tune.
I also really like it was because the dialogue and everything. Yeah, it's very quicky. It's very snappy, but it never felt forced to me. And I think it's only accentuated with some of the edits. I think some of the editing was really good, particularly the scene where they both call Carrie Fisher and the writer character while they're both in bed. And like, I was in my head just like, damn, how did they like, what order did they film this to like get the timing down right? Because it looked really complicated.
Yeah.
Just jumping back.
Well, they would have just had them off screen saying their lines.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. I thought that I was just like, wow, this is really impressive. And it was just super engaging.
It's a really good.
Yeah.
Scene.
And it's so cool. Like it's disoriented, but it's also coherent. Like you understand what each side is saying while they're basically talking over each other, which is I would imagine a really hard thing to accomplish in the edit, but they fucking pulled it off so well.
Yeah. And I was looking up the movie a little bit. It was the DP was Barry Sonnenfeld, who did like a Men in Black, The Tick, Get Shorty, the Addams Family movies. And then he directed them. And then he also DP'd Blood Simple and Raising Arizona. Hmm. So he's like a good
Raising
director
Arizona
in his own right.
Great movie too.
And Misery. Oh yeah.
The Men in Black movies are great. So I mean, he definitely has some visual style.
Yeah, the shots of them walking in I guess maybe it's probably Central Park in the fall. They're so beautiful. Like that's the scene that sticks out to me when I think about this movie. It like makes me want to watch it during like the transition between
also
Thanksgiving
the big,
Christmas.
The big wide shots in the apartment too looked really nice.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it captures the loneliness of being single in your 30s. I mean, it captures the feeling of it's kind of funny because it's clear that when he picks her up in the beginning, they're like 35-year-old, 21-year-olds, you know? That's what we were talking about. that's
on
a movieism.
I love that and also his by, like but. His Jufro comes out of nowhere. He's like has normal hair for like half the movie and then it's just curled up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like whenever they give them like the bangs to make them look younger and they're like, look, I'm a 21-year-old now.
Yeah. And the hair kind of corresponds to whatever the decades. Like she has very 80s hair for a while too and everything. Yeah. But it captures like the way they talk to each other in college is so much different than the things they're talking about are so much different in the first car ride as opposed to when they're in their, I guess like they end in their early 30s probably. I think
she's like 32, something like 33, that. 32.
Yeah, because she's like I'm 30. She's like I'm gonna be 40, and he's like you're 32. And I don't think there were any time jumps after that, so I'm pretty sure. They end the movie.
There was
to
New Year's.
It was
a time jump to New Year's.
Yeah, there was a one year jump, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, but my point is, it's like he's so much more forward in the car. He's being like a kind of suave douchebag, you know, saying things that totally out of pocket. But then by his 30s, he's like much more of an emotionally mature person, and so is she.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I think it showed that he changed a lot through his divorce or whatever. Like as soon as he like. He's like, oh shit, I can't just be a cocky prick all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though he never really loses that aspect of himself.
He just kind of learns to not be such a dick.
Yeah. And the scene where Harry and Sally are both in the apartment of Carrie Fisher and the new guy, and they're like picking out all their furniture and stuff. That was, I mean, it was kind of like a Hollywood type of scene, the way he has that giant outburst, because I don't think, you know, most people that are actually friends with each other, they're not going to be like, just because they went through a breakup, it would be a huge dick move to be like, you know, you're going to fucking break up too. And all this stuff is going to be split up between you. You're going to have to fucking call a lawyer over this fucking, you know, all that shit he said, like that probably wouldn't happen in real life, but
he wouldn't
thoughts,
be my friend anymore.
Yeah, like those thoughts are so real. Like if you're going through a breakup and you see your friend get into a new relationship, you're like a lot of times in the back of your head, you're like, dude, in 6 months or 2 years or whatever the fuck it is, you're gonna be crying to me, you know. Like, you think about that stuff. I really enjoyed that too.
And you asked me earlier if it was if I thought this was like a man or a woman like romance movie.
Like, is it
touching back on what we talked about last week?
I do feel like it's more of like a woman's romance movie, though, if I'm being real.
You think so?
I think it's pretty evenly split.
Yeah, I feel pretty evenly split, because
I don't think they put much focus into how he, like, what he was feeling or what he got out of the relationship. He just wanted to be with her. Like, it was just kind of like his innate nature to want to be with her. Whereas, like, and it had a lot of like big gestures from him, especially towards the end, to try and like show her how much he cares about her and stuff. But they didn't really focus on like why he wanted to be with her, you know?
I mean, I think you don't need to spell it out why he needs to be with her. I mean, they have so much chemistry, you know? I was watching this with my girlfriend. I was like, did they ever date in real life? Because if they didn't, it was surprising to me. Because I feel like they should have dated. Because, you know, they're acting, of course. But it's like, when you see two people like that, that work together so well, it would probably work in real life too, you know? I mean, I don't know. Do you guys agree with that?
I could see that. Yeah, that was very. It's also very common for a lot of actors to end up dating when they play characters that are romantically involved.
Especially when Spider-Man's involved. Do you guys know about that
trend? Oh, man. Except for Shameik Moore. He's the only one that can't.
Yeah, because it was Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst. Then Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, Tom Holland and Zendaya. It's fucking crazy. What about the Miles Morales kid? Is he going to date Hailee Steinfeld?
Oh, no. That's the thing, is he is apparently he's a kind of a weirdo, and he keeps complaining that he isn't dating Hailee Steinfeld.
Are you talking about the animated actor?
Really?
I think he's like, Hailee Steinfeld won't date me. Well, and then he also, the girl from Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, the love interest that's not Zendaya, Liz Allen.
She
apparently has had like, she's like, he's a freaking weirdo and he needs to stop messaging me. I'm getting married and he's being a weirdo creep.
He's an otaku.
like Hailee Steinfeld mentioned that she was getting, like, she made an announcement that she was getting married. And Shameik Moore tweeted like 30 minutes later. It was so funny. What was it? I can't find it, but it was just like something about like, make sure we just always pray and hope for a better tomorrow or something like that. Or like, we're going to get our chance or something like that.
That's so weird. But going back to the movie, I just think when Harry Met Sally, it's not the first romantic comedy, obviously, but I feel like every romantic comedy after that had to contend with just the lightning in the bottle that is this movie. And basically all of them fail to achieve that, because I really think this is a special movie. I mean, I was showing you guys that before, like the Writers Guild of America.
There's
whatever,
definitely some other
shows
that
is like the
40th though.
Best screenplay of all time, which I would totally agree with. You know, I think it's really solid.
I think this era of films was also just like a really good time for like solid writing too. Like this movie, like Groundhog Day, like there's a handful of scripts that I like return to and read over and over, because they're just, the dialogue is just so well handled.
Yeah. It's just like that kind of dialogue that like, it doesn't necessarily make you laugh out loud because it's so funny. It just makes you laugh because it's so clever and impressive that you're just like, fuck, like, how did they think of that? Like the perfect fucking thing to say, you know? Like, I love watching movies like that. But I mean, what would you guys rate this one?
I'm going to do, it's like a high 8 for me. That's where I'm sitting. 8 out of 10.
I think real good. I think I'm like an 8 too.
I'm guessing you're a 10, Nick.
I don't know. It's hard to say it's a 10 just because, as I said, like, this isn't my favorite genre of film, but for like, if I'm just going to judge it based on what it's trying to do, where it sits in the history of its own genre and film as a whole, yeah, I think it's a 10 out of 10 romantic comedy for fucking sure. Yeah. I've never seen a better one. So I would definitely say 10 out of 10. And I don't know.
We're gonna have to get you on some other romantic comedies, bro. There's some other good ones out there, bro. Promise.
I mean, I seriously doubt I'm gonna see one that's better than this.
I think I like Crazy Stupid Love.
Climax. It's really good.
I think I like Crazy Stupid Love more than this movie.
Dude, I've seen what? Crazy Stupid Love is better than this?
You think? I did not think it's that.
I think I enjoyed it more.
I saw that when I was like 11, and I knew.
You're like, dude, I gotta get you onto some fucking some good shit, and you said Crazy Stupid Love.
Well, there's other ones too, but I also like
Punch Drunk Love is really good. That's not necessarily.
That's not a romantic comedy though.
Bro, I gotta get you on The Room. That one's a really great love story.
Oh man, I mean, I like bad ones though. I like a lot of the Matthew McConaughey ones. From back in the day. What's that one with him?
Oh, when he
in,
was constantly doing rom-coms.
What's that one with him and Matthew Broderick's wife?
Oh, I thought you said the rom-com between him and Matthew Broderick.
I don't know, dude. He did so many of them. McConaughey's career is very interesting. The way he was able to dig himself out of that hole of just being a romantic comedy lead, where many of those actors get pigeonholed in that kind of field. And he was, I think it was a True Detective that he got that was able to make people, casting director see him in a different light.
Mud. No, not Mud. Not Mud. There's another one that's like a low budget movie. It was like an NC-17 movie that he made. Killer Joe. I think that's what it's called. But that
he was in Mud too, right?
He was in Mud. But Killer Joe was first, and I think that was like where people were like, "Oh, maybe he can be a dramatic actor."
Yeah, started giving him other roles. I looked up rom-coms from with Matthew McConaughey, and it's Failure to Launch, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Ghost of Girlfriend's Past, Fool's Gold, The Wedding Planner, Tiptoes, Ed TV, My Boyfriend's Back, and Magic Mike. So that's a lot.
Yeah,
y'all should check out Killer Joe if y'all have time. It's a pretty good movie.
I was actually reading. I was reading something about Christopher Nolan was saying that McConaughey, like, he had to fight to get McConaughey in Interstellar. The you know, I guess studio execs were like, we just do not see him in a movie like holding it together in a movie this big. Just because I guess he hadn't really proven himself at that point as a dramatic lead, but Christopher Nolan was obviously proven right because McConaughey, even amazing. To this day, is like still one of the most in-demand leading men, I think. You know,
yeah. Nice. He's so good in Interstellar as well.
Yeah,
he's so good in like everything that he actually like is taking seriously.
I mean, I guess it's like. To make that jump though, it takes a lot. It must have been really difficult because I feel like once audiences see you that way, especially men, like men would just see McConaughey. I did until I started seeing him in True Detective. I was like, this guy is just like a heartthrob.
Life,
not necessarily talentless, but not someone I would take seriously as a dramatic lead. You know,
I think they have to take the indie route. Like similar with Robert Pattinson taking Good Time and shit like that. So like the indie route's the safer route because you're not necessarily going to be pigeonholed as like a TV actor. You can also go the TV route, but it's like more dangerous because you might get stuck there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Pattinson's another great example of someone who did the same thing.
Yeah.
Matthew Broderick, Matthew Broderick's kind of someone who was never really able to get out of it. I mean, he wasn't exclusively rom-coms, but that was kind of his bread and butter.
What are you talking about? He was in Godzilla.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was necessarily typecast. I feel like he just doesn't really act that much anymore.
Yeah, he seems like a guy who has a really normal
life. He was in a lot
of
rom-coms, dude, though.
He, like, murdered somebody and then, like, got away with it.
Oh, my God, what?
And then he ran somebody over with his car and killed him.
I remember that.
And then he kind of just disappeared. All right,
I'm going to retire, everybody.
I remember I saw him in like a nothing role, in fucking Manchester by the Sea. Do you remember that? He plays the Christian dad that Lucas Hedges goes to.
He has a few like really small like supporting roles like in the last like 10 years.
I remember seeing that and feeling depressed. I was like, they could have easily just given this to any guy that just tried out for this role. And now Broderick has fallen so low in his career that he's taking this kind of shit. It was like, it's kind of sad. Also, speaking of Lucas Hedges, I was reading this Reddit thread that was kind of interesting the other day about like what the fuck happened to Lucas Hedges. Like in the late 2010s, he was like, I guess you could say competing with Chalamet to be like the Gen Z it boy for that generation. he had so many great supporting roles, like Manchester by the Sea, he was in Lady Bird, and then I don't know, where the fuck is he now?
He just kind of stops. Yeah, he kind of faded out in 2018, 2019.
But do you guys think that's like because he wasn't talented, or
I don't know?
I think he's talented enough. I think it's like a lot of those actors. First of all, he's not that cute anymore, so I feel like he's gonna have to kind of
got those cheeks, bro.
He's gonna kind of have to rebrand himself a little bit. But I think who's that guy from the weird looking dude?
Jesse Plemons.
Not Jesse Plemons. The RV movie, fucking with
Will Poulter.
Will Poulter. I feel like he's gonna have to pull a Will Poulter of some kind to really come back into the mainstream.
Should get super shredded or low budget TV
some muscle
show
and like get a tan, you know, find a new way to be handsome. Because I think that was what was going for him.
Will Poulter's turning point, you're not gonna want to admit this, but it was Midsommar.
It was.
That was what
that's
made,
a good point.
That's what made people see Will Poulter in a different light, other than hanging out with the Regrets guy in the We're the Millers.
That's not true. Maze Runner.
He was in Maze Runner. I forgot about that.
He's had a lot of roles. He just kind of changed his appearance.
He's still pretty young. He's 32.
Did you guys know he was supposed to be Pennywise, and when Cary Fukunaga was gonna do?
I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, I watched a lot of videos about that, like, because there's some information on what Cary Fukunaga's it would have been like.
Way more weird.
Yeah, yeah. If True Detective is any indication of what his style would be. Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, I liked the It movies. So
I liked It Part One. I did not like It Part Two at all.
Yeah,
really?
Agreed.
Yeah, I think it sucked.
I liked it. I liked
it
for what it
was. Solid.
I mean, Bill Hader is good. Bill Hader is always good. Fun.
The cast was never the problem. It's always the first one felt. I think it's just the inherent issue with it as a story is it's a lot scarier when the main characters are all children facing this horrible monstrous clown.
But that's
versus,
just an issue with the concept
versus
of the whole,
30
though.
Year olds yeah. fighting a monster clown.
Yeah,
I think they do a lot better job in the books, kind of showing the regression as they age, right? Like, I think that's the problem. Is it kind of in the movies they're just like, oh, they're just adults, but in the books they kind of do regress as they get back into Derry, you know?
The issue for me about Part Two is that it's just so dumb for them to be
it's super goofy.
Oh, we have to do the ritual of Chewed or whatever the fuck. I was like, what the fuck is this?
High
like, what was Stephen King thinking when he wrote that? Like, it's so
bro,
deeply
they literally,
stupid.
They literally all ran a fucking train on the little girl in the fucking book, bro. The book is
there's a weird child gangbang thing.
The book is I hate Stephen King books. There's not a single Stephen King book I've ever read that I was like, this is solid all the way through. It's usually, oh, the first third of this book was really fucking sick, and then the rest of it is literally nonsense.
You know what?
Well,
I think
actually The Stand.
Huh?
The Stand?
The Stand is bad too. Have you read it?
Yeah, I like The Stand. Well, I thought that was a pretty good one.
It's good, and then the last third of the book, he's like literally rushing his way to the end as fast as he possibly can to tie everything up, and he doesn't.
Oh, that's his ultimate problem.
I think it would be really interesting for us to talk about, because Stephen King famously hated Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Yeah.
Because Stanley Kubrick just did not give a shit about the book accuracy. And I think it would be really fun at some point on the pod for us to discuss the Stanley Kubrick Shining and then also watch the Stephen King directed Shining adaptation of his own
book.
That's
a great idea. Yeah, I've never seen it.
I think that'd be really funny.
Have y'all seen a lot of his, like, first of all, the movies he backs and says are amazing that he like gives his like props to, always horrible recommendations. He has such bad taste, and like anytime he's like criticizing something, his criticism is fucking stupid. He has like the worst film takes of anybody. Have y'all followed any of this shit?
Well,
that he says?
He dislikes The Shining, the movie.
But it's like a regular thing. Like, he like literally blasts on Twitter whenever he like likes or hates something, and it's always like the complete opposite opinion of me. So I'm just like, okay.
I haven't really seen the opposite. I'm not that familiar with his tweets, but I mean, don't you guys think that partially why he might be so mad about Stanley Kubrick's Shining is because it's
an ego,
like,
thing.
The adaptation is so much more respected than the book. Like, anyone would be salty about that, you know?
100%
so he probably felt like he's like, I'm on a fucking mission to prove that the exact text of my book was so much more perfect than whatever Stanley Kubrick did to fucking annihilate.
Speaking of him, the monkey looks pretty good. I'm not gonna lie.
Is that a Stephen King thing?
That's Oz Perkins' next movie.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. It's like a comedy, right? A horror comedy?
Kinda.
It looks like really it's silly.
The trailers. It seems like it could be kind of funny. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting about the whole like him hating The Shining thing, because from what I've read about the Cary Fukunaga version, it seemed like he was going to lean in a more Stanley Kubrick version, where he was very much going to just take it in his own weird ass direction. And
I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen now too.
Delineate? You think? What do you mean?
Like, I feel like that. You mean for the monkey?
Oh no, I'm just talking about what Cary Fukunaga would have done. Yeah, for it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because everything I've read is weird shit.
Yeah. Maybe it would have leaned further into the space turtle shit.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting. And then
I want some big ass space turtle.
And there was like, I read in the script, there's like an upside down waterfall going into a giant starfish in the Cary Fukunaga script. And I'm like, what the fuck? That sounds sick as hell. And then maybe it would have been cool. Do you remember the stupid ass ending for It Part Two, where they're like, hey, you're a stupid little baby, and he's like, you suck. You're not even scary, you little loser. And then he shrinks into a little
biggest thing is I feel like we got two very tonally consistent movies that had a very distinct art style, and they were just like, that doesn't happen very often, where you get two movies that are pretty solid.
You're talking about it?
Yes. So it's like, yes, we can talk in hindsight, but like, what are the chances of that happening? Like, having like two movies come out and they're both decent. Like, that's
I don't even agree that that's Chapter Two is decent.
I think two is bad. I think it's like 4 out of 10.
I would go so
far
to say that it's. I don't know if it's bad. Just it didn't really do much for me. Honestly, the first one didn't really do that much for me either. There are moments that are good, but like, I don't know, dude. I think this is not a new thing to say at all, but jump scares, just anytime they're in a movie, it has to be done in a innovative way or something. And in it, both of them, it really wasn't. And I can't really forgive it for that.
Yeah.
Not to say that makes the entire movie bad, but it definitely, once they're in there, it has to do a lot more to impress me to make up for that fact. And it never really did, you know?
I'll say jump scares for me, I have to not even think there's a jump scare coming. Like, I have to be so invested in the story itself and be so like,
they caught set up
in the atmosphere of the film to where when a jump scare happens and it doesn't piss me off, that's when I know you've succeeded.
But I feel like they're trying to avoid pissing off the audience, and that's why. But yeah, I agree with you. I think they're very, because it's always, you know, you always know what's coming nowadays.
I think Hereditary has great jump scares. Like, they're very just eerie and unsettling. But there's never like a dun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it in Hereditary, the moment when he's in the attic, he's watching his mom fucking like saw off her own head, and
spoilers,
the camera just like quickly pans to all those naked people, and they just wave at him. That was so terrifying. And I mean, technically, I guess that's a jump scare. But like, to me, when I think of jump scares in the classic, like, mainstream Hollywood sense, it needs that thing that you're talking about, even that stinger. Like, you know, like, if it doesn't have that, I don't necessarily see it as a jump scare. I mean, I don't know. Do you think it is?
That's fair. I mean,
I don't really consider
it
a jump scare either.
It depends. Like, I'd say for me, the scarier moments in Hereditary are like the moment where the son wakes up and you just, you might not even catch it, but the mom in the corner of his bedroom on the ceiling. Like, and it's like a minute long shot, and it's that is one of the best shots of filling me with dread, because you're like, I've been looking at this the whole time and I didn't even notice that she was right there. That's terrifying to me. That's way more effective than a jump scare to me. But I don't know, I think like there's a in Signs, like, M. Night Shyamalan, I think, has a really good example of a jump scare without the classic jump scare sound, where he's walking around the cornfield, Mel Gibson, and he drops his flashlight. And when he picks it up, he swings his light over to the corn stalks, and you see the alien's leg just sticking out, and he pulls it in. And then at that moment, all the musical piano cue starts playing, and it's just like, da-da-dun, da-da-dun. And I was like, ooh, that was a good jump. Yeah. There was no dun, you know?
As long as that's not in there, I'm cool with it. I'll just say that.
That's the worst part of Get Out.
But I'm really curious what y'all think about the first non-British actor being casted into, or a first American actor being cast into Harry Potter.
I thought
John Lithgow as Dumbledore.
Oh wait, no, that's Yoda. What's he do? Oh, what's the Lithgow noise?
Lord Farquaad?
No, he makes like a noise.
You guys were talking about the Lithgow noise. I was not aware that Lithgow had a noise.
Yeah, I don't think he has a noise, bro.
No, he does. He has a noise. It's like, oh, or something.
It sounds like a mix between Chewbacca and Yoda. What you're doing?
He doesn't have a noise, I don't think, bro.
I got to get up on the Lithgow noise, but yeah. To answer your question, Nick, I don't know. I feel fine about it, actually. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
He played Winston Churchill in The Crown, and his British accent was really good. So
yeah,
seems as long like as that's been, on point, reaching, I don't really care.
It sounds like you've been reaching out to a lot of actors for the show.
I think he's an amazing actor. Like, amazing fucking actor. So I'm like, it makes me so excited for the show. What do y'all think about Black Snape? Are y'all okay with that?
I don't know the actor. I don't care what his race is, but
I'm just kidding.
I don't know much about the actor, but yeah, to talk about the Americans in the Harry Potter thing, I mean, I guess it might be sort of a controversy because the original adaptation in the early 2000s, like, they made such a concerted effort to make sure it was a British production, to make sure all the actors were British. Like, that was very important to Rowling at the time, or Rowling. I think it's actually Rowling. But and the producers and everything. I mean, they had Christopher Columbus, who was like one of the biggest Hollywood directors at the time, but it was filmed in Britain, you know. Felt like a British production and everything.
They
so
only
to
cast
do this,
British actors.
To do this now, to cast Dumbledore as an American guy, I mean, maybe it doesn't bode well for this new adaptation, you know, potentially feeling more Hollywood than the last one. I don't know. That could be. But I love Lithgow, so I'm cool with it.
I will say the actor for Snape, he's in a show called Gangs of London, which is done by the guy who did the Raid movies. Have y'all seen those?
Gareth Evans.
Yeah, Gareth Edwards Evans, one of them. But the show's really good, and he's really good in it. So, like, I don't know if anybody is like mad about the casting. He's literally, they never mention his race in the books at all, like ever once. So it's like, I think it's one of those things where like it doesn't really fucking matter.
Well, the people who are mad about it, they're saying that like they describe Snape's skin is described as like pale or sallow a lot of times, which is like kind of connotes white skin, but
that.
It's like, I don't fucking care. They do. They say you know, his skin is sallow and stuff like that, whatever. But I don't know. I don't really
either.
Think it
I feel like it's one of those characters. I feel like it's one of those characters where like it doesn't really make any impact. You know what I mean?
No. I think that like I always see this discussion, I always think it's more interesting. It's like, if the race is inherently important to the character, I think then you should, like, I don't want to see, like the meme is, Ryan Gosling playing Black Panther, because that would be very weird and not right. But, you
or
know,
John
like
Wayne
you can have other
fucking
characters where the race isn't important, having played by, you know, a mixed actor or a darker actor.
Do you remember the meme that was going around, Ryan Gosling playing the Obama and then Obama biopic? That was really funny too. It's just like a picture of Ryan Gosling in a suit, and it just said Ryan Gosling is Obama.
Barack Obama.
I hate that I'm that millennial, like the meme, because I'm so excited for the Harry Potter show.
Are you like, actually?
I'm actually so excited, dude. It's so
dude,
it's
I'm,
so
I'm right there with you, bro. I'm excited.
I'm okay. Surprised. All right.
Dude, Ethan, you
love the Harry Potter.
You're not a millennial, bro. You don't get it.
Yeah,
think Harry
I know,
Potter's
but I'm
cringe.
A Harry Potter fan. No, I'm a Harry Potter fan. I did Harry Potter shit. I've read all the books.
I didn't even know Gen Z Harry Potter fans existed. I thought that was
okay,
a
well,
Slytherin.
I'm on the end of Gen Z, so.
I thought that was Slytherin disinfo, bro.
Why am I such a fan of things that terrible people make, too? Like, I love Armie Hammer, even though he's a cannibal. You love Ezra Armie Miller. Hammer. He's so he's so charismatic, bro.
Like even
he's so charismatic.
I'm saying the fucking Armie Hammer stand.
Even if he wasn't a cannibal and didn't like want to eat people's brains and stuff, he's just like such a nondescript actor. I feel like he didn't do anything great.
I think he's good. I think he's really
in Social
good.
Network as that asshole.
No, he's in what's that one where they're stuck in the building altogether?
Skyscraper with The Rock.
No.
Oh, is it the James Gunn movie?
Belko Experiment?
Yeah, the Belko Experiment.
Belko Experiment's good too, though. But that has Ezra Miller in it.
Oh, one of your other problematic faves.
Yeah. And then J.K. Rowling, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, so I just love all these people.
Do you like the Jeepers Creepers movies?
The first one's badass.
Okay, because that guy's a pedophile.
No, I know. I'm well aware.
Dude, you didn't say PDF file.
Oh, sorry. Fuck. Censor that, Nick, in the edit.
Okay.
Your punishment for liking all these people is you have to censor my language.
I think people say Pedialyte drinker too.
They're gonna ban.
But everybody likes Kevin Spacey. It's like one of those R. Kelly situations where like everybody likes R. Kelly's music, but we hate him. Everybody likes Kevin Spacey's acting, but we hate him.
I was listening back to one of our episodes, and I was literally just like, I hope no one ever clips out them. I can't deny. I miss Kevin Spacey. Like, I just said that outright. Like, please don't clip this. Don't fucking clip this.
But people are just lying if they're saying they don't, though.
I don't miss him, but I think he's a talented actor. I think he's a bad person, allegedly. But I don't want to see, you know, I don't want him to thrive if he sucks.
What, you don't want to let him be
frank, his performances.
We're not going to, it's not like you're going to sit here and say Ignition's a bad song.
Dude,
I don't know. Let this man
be frank again, because that fucking last season of House of Cards sucked. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't into House of Cards.
I watched it as a social experiment for myself, dude. That was fucking... They just pretended like he didn't exist. Like, the main character was a non-factor somehow. Well, he's gone or dead, and it doesn't actually matter. And it's like, what? The whole show is letting this man be Frank, and he's fucking just not in the show anymore. It's like, what?
It was like the beginning of the cancellation era, and they didn't know how to handle it yet. They were like, what do we fucking do?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck do we do?
There's this I guess we'll go with the option of I have to go now. My home planet needs me. Like, they literally did the Poochie shit, dude. The Kevin Spacey.
God damn it. All right, Ethan, what's your pick, bro?
Okay, I'm giving you guys two options. I'm not telling you what they are, but I'm telling you what are we going to pivot in the opposite direction of cutesy romance, you know, all that.
I want to watch what you want us to watch.
So here's my options. I have a foreign language film crime thriller, or I have a weird existential horror mystery. One of them's from the early 2000s, one of them's from 4 years ago.
Which is which?
The one from 4 years ago is the horror mystery, and the foreign language film is from the early 2000s.
And they're both Criterion.
I want the foreign language.
No, only one of them is. But I was like, you know, the other one, I was like, you know, I want to. If we talk about this one, I'd be down because I've been wanting.
I'm definitely
to watch
down for the horror mystery. That sounds fun.
Yeah,
I'm down for the other one. But
thanks.
Oh, shit.
You guys are being really helpful and being so decisive. Thanks a lot.
I'll do a two-face coin flip right now where I make my own luck and say, fuck Nick, we're doing the...
You know what? After hearing it, I'm just going to go with the horror mystery one from 4 years ago.
Well, what were they both? I want to know what they both are.
I'll tell you what the one I picked. We're going to watch The Empty Man from 2020, directed by David Pryor. I've only heard good things about this movie, or weird things about this movie, and how nobody has seen it, and it was a super expensive horror movie that just completely bombed and got no advertising.
But now it's distributed by Disney. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I love it.
You've seen it? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
What's the other one?
Well, that's fine. I'm excited to talk about that because I want to watch it. The other one is Memories of Murder by Bong Joon-ho from 2003.
Okay.
Oh, we missed that on a Bong Joon-ho
movie. Man. That's okay. It'll be on the list.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. We'll get around to it. All right. So thank you, everybody, for watching. If you watch this on YouTube, please leave us a like and a comment. And go ahead and subscribe if you're feeling so inclined. If you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please leave us a 5-star review because that really helps. We're trying to grow our audio listeners. And if you did not want to be spoiled for next episode where we talk about The Empty Man directed by David Pryor from 2020, make sure you watch it before next episode. And make sure you get stuckmanized.
Get stuckmanized.
Get stuckmanized.
Good night, everybody.